That's my name. Here we go. We're on. We're on. Yes, we're on. Forgot to turn the level up there. That was very bright of me, wasn't it? However, suffice it to say, you're listening to 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them. And if you can repeat that by now, then good on you. You have been listening and paying attention. You're very good. Very good. And these songs, of course, this was... was selected by Australian music journalist Toby Cresswell, who didn't really think these were necessarily the 1001 greatest songs of all time, but in his opinion, they're all pretty good, all pretty terrible, but they all deserve a little bit of airtime. And giving them airtime is what I'm doing right here on Waiheke Radio 88.3 and 107.4 for an hour every week, as it happens. Yes, every week. And this week, the first song we are going to start off with here is Blur and Girls and Boys from 1994 and the album Park Life. Singer Damon Albarn was inspired to write Blur's real breakthrough single while on holiday in the Mediterranean. It's about those sorts of days, he told NME, when I went on holiday with Justine last summer to Magaluf. I'm not quite sure where Magaluf is. Should know, but I'll look it up. And the place was just equally divided between cafes serving up full English breakfasts and really tacky Essex nightclubs. There's a really strong sexuality about it. I just love the whole idea of it, to be honest. I love herds. All these blokes and all these girls meeting in the watering hole and then just copulating. There's no morality involved. I'm not saying that it should or shouldn't happen. My mind's just getting more dirty. I can't help it. Mind getting more dirty. The Pet Shop Boys have agreed to do a mix it for us, and we should be brilliant. That's what I'm hoping for, is that we can come up with a version that becomes the big summer hit in all those nightclubs in Spain and Mallorca. That's exactly what we want. I'd love those people to be into Blur. The Park Life album, from which Girls and Boys came, has a very kinksy view of modern Britain after Margaret Thatcher's innovations brought middle-class prosperity to Middle Britain, so much of the national treasure became simply consumerist and bland. Girls and Boys is a cheeky and trashy and vaguely sexual in the way that David Bowie once was. It also has a Benny Hill seaside postcard feel to it, a jaunty chorus. Girls who like boys who... and I can't read the words, they're so fast. I don't know, you see. No, I don't know all the words to... Don't know all the words to that, to be honest. I discovered the other night, though, that I knew all the words to Wonderwall, and I'm quite proud of that achievement, actually. Not that they're hard, but I'm still quite proud of that achievement. For me, the album is like a loosely linked concept involving all these different stories. It travels of the mythical lager eater, as a mystical lager eater, seeing what's going on in the world and then commenting on it. Social commentary there, said Albarn. Every book goes on about the idea of a sensitive artiste, but for me that's all bollocks. I can't stand the idea of being a sad, lonely bedsit poet. I'd much rather be perceived as loud and arrogant, because all our sensitivities in our records. That's quite nice, and it's lovely and loud and arrogant too. Yeah, and this is Blur with Girls and Boys.
Oh,
That was Blur with Girls and Boys from 1994, incidentally. And you're listening to 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time and the artists, the stories and the secrets behind them, right here on Waiheke Radio 88.3 and 107.4 FM. And, of course, you can catch us on our website, www.waihekeradio.org.nz, or facebook.com/waihekeradio, which... I'd like everybody to feel obliged to like. Shout out to Sarah and Mark and Mary and Dave, incidentally. And next up, we've got Mr. Jones and Counting Crows. Sorry, Counting Crows and Mr. Jones. A nice meter there from 1993. Counting Crows always did have high-profile fans, no less than the band's Robbie Robertson encouraged his daughter to see their show with the advice they're a really good band. A little derivative, perhaps, but worth seeing. Duritz is a songwriter who sees himself very clearly in the American tradition of Robertson and the band Tom Petty and Bob Dylan. His breakthrough song, in fact, takes a little from the title of... Bob Dylan's hapless reporter in the Ballad of a Thin Man. You know, there's something going on and you don't know what it is, do you, Mr. Jones? Da 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 ba da 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 da, etc. I really wanted to be a rock star since I was 5 years old doing Can't Buy Me Love in front of the mirror with a tennis racket, Duritz confessed. But I also thought it was really crazy seeing Thing to One. There was just disaster in that, and I wasn't seeing it clearly. That's what Mr. Jones is actually about. It's rather sad, that tongue-in-cheek song about daydreaming of being famous. Now it's happened, the tongue-in-cheek part's gone, and all that's left is the bitterness. The Counting Crows' debut album sold 5 million copies worldwide, in part due to Mr. Jones. It was a time when angst was very popular and Duritz was angsty, but knew how to give his pain in the sweetest possible context. People say about me that it should be fun, but I don't agree, Duritz told Mojo. I don't care about fun. Not in music. It's not fun. I don't enjoy it. I feel it, though. It moves me deeply. I have a deep satisfaction. But fun? Fuck fun! Go and have fun somewhere else. I do it so I can be who I am in my life. But fun? I'll go have fun later. But right now, I want your soul, and I want it on tape. Very deep there. Deep words from Adam Duritz, who incidentally co-wrote Counting Mr. Jones with David Bryson. And here it is for your listening pleasure on Waiheke Radio, Mr. Jones by Counting Crows. That was Counting Crows and Mr. Jones right here on Wakey Radio 107.4 and 88.3. This is 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories and the secrets behind them are selected by Toby Cresswell and presented by yours truly, Seth Tetley Jones. Next up, Susie and the Banshees and Christine. I like to think that the vocals rely a lot on sound rather than the tune. There's nobody in the band's into melody, thank God, said Susie Sue. Having started out proudly incompetent, by their third album, Kaleidoscope, the Banshees found their stride. John McGeoch of Magazine was playing an inventive role as guitarist, and Budgie was one of the more interesting London drummers. Kaleidoscope is a vaguely psychedelic album, in as much as it's heavily textured in ways by both design and accident. Susie was, by this time, a role model for legions of young women who dressed in black. She was iconoclastic, if that's a word. She was also rude. She was glamorous, but also strangely down-to-earth. Christine is a young woman's song, full of fears of and the excitement of finding identity in the England of tepid tea and tabloid papers. She's English. Sorry. Tried doing an American accent before. I should do my research. Do your research, Seth. You can't know everything about every song that was ever written. Just having a little Gollum conversation here, you see. And what I'm doing right now is I'm sort of leaning over on one side of the mic here, and then I'm sort of turning around and looking on the other side. Yeah, that's right, Seth. That's right. Yeah, exactly, Seth. Exactly. Why the hell are you agreeing with me? We're supposed to be having a fight here. We're on air and we're on radio. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to. I don't really like confrontation, you see. Well, you better man up to confrontation. I should stop having a fight, shouldn't I? Having a fight with myself, that's just sad. She was glamorous, but also strangely down to earth. Christine is a young woman. Song full of fears of excitement, blah 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 blah. Here we go. That wonderful land of manufactured lies and stifling conformity. Where do you find such fertile breeding grounds for disparate malcontents? The Banshees were just, and in their incoherence, they made particular sense. Christine may have been the anthem for post-feminist goths, but its angular melodies have a truth. That's Susie and the Banshees and Christine.
Stranger inside, hopeless and forcing on modern disguise. Christine, the strawberry girl, Christine, banana split lady, Christine, the strawberry girl, Christine, banana split lady. Savages lost in our world. This big old girl sees her face is a girl. Now she's in purple, now she's a turtle. Disintegrating Christine, the strawberry girl, Christine, banana split lady, Christine, the strawberry girl, Christine, sees her face is unfurled. She's a turtle, disintegrating Christine, the strawberry girl, Christine, banana split lady, Christine, the strawberry girl, Christine, sees her face is unfurled. Christine, Christine,
Susie and the Banshees and Christine. For some reason, and don't ask me why this is, but for some reason I always thought that song was called Maxine, right back from when I was so high, you know. And I think there's some strange relic of my childhood there. I'm not quite sure what that's about, but anyway, you're listening to Waiheke Radio 88.3 and 107.4 FM, and this is 1001 Songs with me, your host, Seth Tetley-Jones. Next song that Mr. Toby Cresswell has selected for us is Prince and Little Red Corvette. And it's from 1983, but it appears on the album 1999. It's a bit confusing for you there. But then again, I am an easily confused person, yes. I'm being very insight into my own conditioning tonight, aren't I? What's the word for that? Oh, I can't remember. Anyway, I am being very insight into my own conditioning tonight. Like Chuck Berry 30 years before, it was a car song that crossed Prince's funk soul's rock style over to a mainstream audience. The song was written in a Pink Floyd, in a Pink Ford Edsel, belonging to Lisa Coleman from Prince's backing band, The Revolution. The 1999 album accelerated the momentum that Prince had begun only 3 years before. He installed a state-of-the-art studio in his house, and next day he cut Little Red Corvette. At the time, Prince was putting together careers for Vanity 6 and The Time, as well as his own full touring and recording schedule. Perhaps it, in the spirit of time management, Prince also bought an early drum machine. I felt it was like an auto assembly worker looking at a robot for a first time, wondering if I still had a job, said drummer Bobby Z. Or Bobby, no, it's Bobby Z. Bobby Z or Bobby Z. I always have trouble with Z's and Z. You know, Jay-Z, JZ, ZZ Top, ZZ Top. I mentioned that a few weeks ago, but I thought it... I mention it every time Z's come up because they're just so confusing. Prince said, here it is, figure out what you're going to do with it. Little Red Corvette, like Berry's Maybelline. We had Maybelline about 100 songs ago, right here on 1001 Songs. I'll see if I can dig that out for you sometime. But, you know, it's the one that goes, Maybelline, Maybelline. And you can hear the solo from that on my promo, you know. And it goes, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Hello, I'm Seth, and this is 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, etc., 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 like I do in my... radio voice, my try-hard radio voice there. Little Red Corvette, like Berry's Maybelline, eroticized the automobile, taking a metaphor one step further. Prince's presentation, both vocally and in the video clip, was pure sex. He was trying to become as mainstream as possible, said the Revolution's Matt Fink, without compromising. This is Prince and Little Red Corvette.
Oh, on the verge of being insane. No, Lord, baby, give me the keys. I'm gonna try to tame you with your red love machine.
Little Red Corvette by Prince. You're listening to Waiheke Radio on 88.3 and 107.4. And this is 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them, as selected by Toby Cresswell and presented by yours truly, Seth Tetley Jones. Next in this selection of 1001 Songs is Alicia Keys and A Woman's Worth. Alicia Keys is a triumph. Alicia Keys' triumph is also Clive Davis's triumph. Davis had been dumped by the BMG label, the implication being that as he neared 70 years of age, he had lost his touch. Then he went out and signed an 18-year-old girl from Harlem and sold 10 million records. Keys has a killer combination of R&B and cool jazz and smarts, and is a prodigious writer. She is often unfairly compared with the early 70s diva Roberta Flack. Keys had already had a record deal at the age of 16 and walked away from it to preserve her artistic integrity. She found her partner in Davis, and the songs in A minor LP. Oh, I see. Songs in A minor. Yeah, I thought it said songs in a minor LP. I thought that can't be right. But no, it's songs in A minor. And it's that, and the songs in A minor LP is that rare meeting of an artist and of development. And this is Alicia Keys and A Woman's Worth.
You could buy me diamonds, you could buy me pearls, take me on a cruise. Just don't, but a show that you know she is worth your time.
Alicia Keys and A Woman's Worth right here on Waiheke Radio 88.3 and 107.4 FM. This is 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them, as selected by Toby Cresswell and presented by yours truly, Seth Titley Jones, that's me. The next song that Mr. Cresswell has selected right here on Waiheke Radio is Aretha Franklin. And You Make Me Feel Like a Natural Woman from 1968. In fact, sorry, I'll read it out as it's written. Open brackets. You make me feel like, close brackets, a natural woman. And it appears on the album Lady Soul. The sadness, you couldn't define it. It was ungraspable, like quicksilver. But it was my job to furnish the most nurturing context for the music. I had to get rid of the players who were alert and the little changes on improvisations that Aretha might throw in there, said Jerry Wexler. Oh, this song was written by Jerry Wexler, yeah, and also co-written by Jerry Goffin and Carole King, who you might remember from a few weeks ago. They wrote The Locomotion, which of course is most famous in its rendition by Little Ava from about 1961 or something like that. But anyway, Jerry Goffin and Carole King, prolific American songwriting couple. Wexler had been in love with Franklin's voice ever since he heard her sing gospel in a Chess record in the 1950s. The producer waited out her contract with Columbia, where she was cutting polite jazz. As soon as it expired, Wexler signed Wexler signed Aretha Franklin to Atlantic, a label he co-owned, and he took her back to church. This was one of the stellar partnerships in pop music. With Wexler at the board, she cut I Never Loved a Man the Way I Loved You, then Respect, and suddenly Aretha Franklin was the Queen of Soul. Franklin had grown up in church. Her father was a preacher. By the time Wexler found her, she had lived a little as well. On the sides they cut together at Atlantic, Aretha married the sacred and the profane. He said that. He said the exact same phrase about Christian's automobile by the Dixie Hummingbirds last week, which was, again, a very sarcastic Christian commentary comparing the car to Christianity. At any rate, this is Aretha Franklin and a natural woman. Franklin had "You Make Me Feel Like a Natural Woman" was written by Franklin for Jerry Goffin and Carol, written for Franklin by Jerry Goffin and Carol King, the greatest husband-wife writing sharp partnership in pop music, as I mentioned before, though I didn't actually call them that, to be fair. Wexler suggested the title as a brief for Goffin and King. Where Respect is a song about asserts and demands, Natural Woman is more sensual. It is not any less powerful or feminine than Respect, but it certainly has a softer lyric. Wexler enlisted Wilson Pickett's band for the backing. The Natural Woman has an organic build to it. That's the key. Franklin allows the song to swell and evolve as she goes with it, rising to the occasion rather than pushing the arrangement. Many have tried the song, but only Franklin and Carole King have done it justice. They're the only singers who have allowed the song to take its natural way, and I'm afraid I haven't got the Carole King version for you, but here's Aretha Franklin, and You Make Me Feel Like a Natural Woman.
Looking out on the morning rain, I used to feel so uninspired, and when I knew I had to face another day, Lord, it made me feel so tired. Before the day I met you, life was so unkind.
Aretha Franklin, and You Make Me Feel Like a Natural Woman, written by Jerry Goffin and Carole King, and, I've got the wrong page, Jerry Wexler. Couldn't remember whether it was Jerry or Jeremy, I must confess to you. See, I don't have a very good memory after all, but I do remember that you're listening to Waiheke Radio, and that Waiheke Radio is on 88.3 and 107.4 FM. Well, actually, to tell you the truth, I instinctively look up on the thing at the thing on the wall, which says that. But don't tell anyone. Don't tell anyone. Just make them think that I have a very good memory. Yes, that's right. Yeah, exactly. And this is 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them, as presented by Seth Titley-Jones and selected by Toby Cresswell. And I said that with my eyes closed, so I couldn't be looking at anything besides, which I said that really fast, too fast for me to read it off somewhere and forget of a place for me to read it off, so obviously I can remember it. Thank you very much! The next song on 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, is Jan and Dean and Surf City from 1963. Jan Berry and Dean Torrance were a singing duo who were swept up in the wave of California surf sound. Berry, the creative force in the pair, befriended the Beach Boys' Brian Wilson. As you can see here, the writing credit says Jan Berry stroke or slash, whichever you prefer, stroke or slash, Jan Berry slash Brian Wilson. And he befriended the Brian Wilson to crank out anthems for an idealized Californian summer. Surf City is the greatest teen anthem of the 1960s. The song is set in adventure. Young kids going to a new paradise where there were two girls for every boy. They do it slightly better on the song. They have this really sickly sweet opening where they do that exact line. It's quite frustrating, actually. It's a bit annoying. That's just my opinion. I find it a bit annoying, but that's just me. Berry was, by all accounts, a creditable producer. There's nothing compared with, nothing compared with Wilson. Jan and Dean were destined to be also rans to the Beach Boys. That makes no sense, but I'm just going to read it anyway. If Berry, who sings the lead on this track, had been any better, the record would lose much of its garage charm. Berry did most of his recording at the Western Recorders on Sunset Boulevard with the same team of A-class players as Phil Spector, the Beach Boys, and the Byrds used. Wilson was at this date too and sang the falsetto part, somewhat edging out Torrance. According to Wilson, Jan asked me, he said, "Will you sing with me on the lead part?" So I doubled with him. But he was louder than I was, you know, and he didn't want to make me louder than him on a Jan and Dean record. Wilson's participation was uncredited. He then contracted to a rival label, but the sound was so much of a piece that with the early Beach Boys that it was all just part of the one long beach party. The song hit number one in July 1963. California surf music was an extraordinary phenomenon. On the basis of a couple of records, a fantasy of the world of unblemished teenagers having innocent, wacky hijinks while engaging in water sports was sold to teenagers the world over. Innocent, wacky hijinks while engaging in water sports. Must remember that. So as should you all. Yes, you don't get out of it that easily. It was more popular in the Midwest of the US than in the UK than it was in California, which is fairly logical, because if you're in California, you're already there. You know, you want to be sort of engulfed in 20 years before bland Thatcherism, or in the Midwest of suburbs, you know, or somewhere. Just talking sociologically here, for it to really have that effect. Surf music, and Surf City in particular, was the last innocent utopia on the airwaves, and here it is, Jan and Dean and Surf City.
Yeah. checking out the parties for a surfer girl.
Dean and Surf City, and there was too many ands in that sentence, and it was their, and it was their ands, not mine, that were the too many ones. My ands are good, thank you. And I am Seth Titley Jones, and I am bringing you 1001 songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them are selected by Toby Cresswell. And this is Waiheke Radio 88.3 and 107.4 FM. And the next song that we've got for you tonight is Sergio Mendes and Brazil 66 from 1966. Of course, Machinada is what it is. Sergio Mendes cut his teeth as a jazz pianist in Brazil while working on Antonio Carlos Jobim and João Gilberto, pioneering the bossa nova. Yes, like I say, I had to go at the Spanish. Mendes was certainly well regarded as an instrumentalist and arranger, playing with visiting American jazz masters such as Stan Getz and Dizzy Gillespie and Charlie Byrd and Roy Eldridge. While visiting New York in 1962, he cut the album with Cannonball Adderley. Mendes was astute enough to balance his more adventurous playing with commercial sessions and recordings. In 1964, he moved to the US, and a year later he formed his own combo. Brazil 65, which a year later became Brazil 66, came to the attention of trumpeter and impresario Herb Albert, who signed Mendes to his A&M label. Brazil 66 had a string of easy-listening hits, regularly charting the top 10 pop charts of the time. Often their hits were bossa nova versions of Beatles songs and the like, but equally they had Latin tunes that found an audience. Mendes ran a tight band of three instrumentalists and two very winsome female vocalists. Machinada is a typical breed of the supple, winding, swinging ensemble, playing with Mendes's witty piano and the breathless voice of Lani Hall, bringing the roller romance of South America into the suburban living room. For your listening pleasure in your suburban living room. I'm sure that not all of you are sitting in suburban living rooms. For those of you who are, this one goes out to you. No, where was I? Blah, blah, blah. Suburban living room. Here we are. It's not only that Brazil 66 has succeeded because it conforms to one's belief that musically there are fluid times with more openings than ever before in contemporary creative endeavor, wrote Derek Taylor in his liner notes to the album. I can see how substantial international achievement can elude the group, who have marketed with considerable taste a delicately mixed blend of pianistic jazz, subtle Latin nuances, Lennon-McCartneyisms, and some Mancini, here with a ton there with a touch of Bacharach. Cool minor chords and a danceable upbeat, gentle laughter, and a little sex. Sounds like a bloody ingredient list. Anyway, this is Sergio Mendes and Brazil 66 with Machinada.
Pois o samba está animado. O eu quero é samba. Este samba que é misto de maracatu. É samba de preto veio, samba de preto. Mas que nada, um samba como esta tá legal. Você não vai querer que chegue. Yeah.
nada. Saiga minha frente que eu quero passar. Pois o samba está animado. O que eu quero é samba. Este samba que é misto de maracatu. É samba de preto veio. Samba de preto du. Mas que nada. Um samba como este é tão legal. Você não vai querer.
The song was first recorded in 1966, which really should go without saying because it's by Sergio Mendes and Brazil 66. I think it was also recorded in Brazil, but don't quote me on that, it doesn't say that anywhere in the book. And it is Mas Que Nada, which I think means more of nothing. I just realised, though, that I said I had a go at the Spanish before, and then I realised it was Brazil and it was Portuguese. Yeah. Yeah. Don't Be Cruel by Elvis Presley. The flip side to Hound Dog became a hit in its own right. Otis Blackwell, a New York-based songwriter, wrote the song, and Presley was keen to record it. By this time, he was getting submissions from songwriters like Blackwell, who'd previously only worked with black artists. Presley crossed their work over to a pop audience. Don't Be Cruel was cut during Presley's first session in New York. First New York sessions, sorry, on the second day of July in 1956. The song was begun in the late afternoon, after lunch, and took some 30 takes to get right, a stupendous effort in those days. Don't Be Cruel shows Presley's vulnerable side in a terrific vocal performance. The rest of the band remains completely understated. His presence really swings the song with a touch of what his manager called Western bop. Sam Phillips, his old producer, was flabbergasted, so much so that he had to pull the car over to the side of the road when the song first played on his car radio. Phillips said later, I thought they have really found this man's ability. The rhythm was right, and it was moving along just right. It had the absolute spontaneity, yet Elvis was still in command of the situation. And this is Elvis Presley, and Don't Be Cruel, right here on Waiheke Radio.
You know I can be found, sit home all alone. If you can't come around, at least please tell the phone. Don't be cruel, too hard is true. Baby, if I made you mad, something I might have said. Please don't forget my past. The future looks bright ahead. Don't be cruel to who heart is true. I don't want no other love. Baby, it's just you I'm thinking of. Don't stop thinking of me. Don't make me feel this way. Don't be cruel to who heart is true. Why should we be apart? I really love you, baby. Cross my heart. Let's walk up to the preacher and let's say I do. Then you'll know you'll have me, and I know that I'll have you. Don't be cruel to who heart is true. It's true. I don't want no other love, baby, it's true.
Presley and Don't Be Cruel from 1956. That was 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them, which is repeated every Tuesday on Saturdays. Every Tuesday on Saturdays. It's quite funny, actually. It is repeated every Saturday at 2 o'clock, not every Tuesday. Tuesday and 2. Start with the same letter, and actually they sound quite a lot alike if you do them in an American accent. But either way, that's all we've got time for. And this show is repeated on Saturdays at 2 p.m. And every Monday night at 8 p.m. you get a new edition of the show. And so until next Monday night...